This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tumotu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today we have with us John Hornblow and I'm Andrew Stevens. Hi John, how are you today?
Good, thanks Andrew. Yeah, that's good. Great.
We're going to talk about funerals today. And I think you can probably start with some of the funerals that you've taken. Many, I believe.
Yes, I guess I've been taking funerals for, I don't know, 25 or 30 years, and quite a regular rate. I mean, the last 12 months I've taken 13, so the statistics would stack up that I've got a fair experience in taking funerals. And most people, it's really interesting, Andrew, just avoid even thinking about funerals. They avoid dealing with the topic of death, even though it's going to come to all of us at some stage.
Yes.
And where people have done no preparation and no thinking about it, it's actually really hard often on the family. The funerals that go easiest are the ones where that person, the older person, or not only older people, have actually given some thought to it, made some notes, and put those with the family for reference for later. In fact, I've got a file on my desk here of people who want me to take their funerals whenever that happens, and they've given me those notes, and it makes it so much easier. I was involved in a situation where there was a real conflict in a family. They were a secular family, strong atheists, I had taken the husband's funeral, and I was quite comfortable with that. I'm an Anglican minister, but I'll take anybody's funeral. That's my belief. And so anyway, we'd taken his funeral, and the wife after that had said to me, "You know, when you take my funeral," and I thought, "Oh, yeah, okay, what's coming? I want you to robe like an Anglican priest, and we're going to sing All Things Bright and Beautiful." And I went, "Yep, okay, that's really interesting." So, anyway, eventually she died. And I sat round with the family, who had no religious connections whatsoever. And I am there to represent the deceased person. So I sat with the family, and then I said to the family, I said, "Well, actually," as they were talking about the funeral, "these are a couple of things that she wanted." "No way," they said, "that's not going to happen to us." They didn't say over my dead body, that would have been kind of taking it too far. But anyway, eventually, late that evening, an impasse continued, and they said, "We will sleep on it." Anyway, they went home, and they happened to be going through her diaries, and they opened a page in the diary from when she was a little girl, and there it was, in black and white, as a little girl, she had written, "I love to sing All Things Bright and Beautiful." They came back and they said to us, "Look, we're changing. What she said, we will give." But that could have been avoided had the family had some knowledge of that beforehand. And so often I take a funeral, and there has been some thought put into it, but all too often there hasn't been thought put into it by the person. And then the family, I mean, they're in grief. I mean, you know, sometimes we have an anticipation that somebody is going to die, and that's okay, but sometimes it can be quite sudden as well and unexpected. And so that's a very helpful thing that people can do.
It's all in the preparation, isn't it?
It is. And the kinds of things that people need to, that they might want to think about is, so what style of ceremony or service would I like? Would I like a 5-piece jazz band on stage in the Regent Theatre? Or would I like it at All Saints Anglican Church, to give you two kind of different options? You know, would I like it outside? Would I like it, you know, in a hall? Would I like it in a home? Do I want it to be private, or do I want it to be open to anybody? Do I want some religious content in it, or not? Do I want music in it, or not? Those kinds of things will shape the style of the service. They can even think about who they want as pallbearers. But a big question is, do they want to be cremated, or do they want to be buried? And a lot of people these days, the majority of people, including those who from their ethnicities would once have shunned cremation, are actually accepting cremation as an option, particularly from an environmental point of view. There is debate as to whether it is environmentally better, but generally the amount of land that is taken up by a burial does make it tricky. I mean, some cemeteries are now getting pretty full, and it's pretty hard for people to find, you know, a place to bury. And you can't just bury somebody in their backyard. You can scatter ashes in a variety of places, though you do need to be aware of where you're scattering them, because if it's got Māori connections or Pacifica connections, or if it's on somebody else's land or even council land, you have to be just a little bit careful about that. But cremation is certainly an option that most people would be wanting to consider these days.
Mm.
They can have an environmental burial, but that is, I think, Makara in Karori in Wellington is about the closest, is from my recollection. But the interesting thing is that the person I buried there, they wanted an environmentally sensitive burial. But we drove, along with about 10 other cars, from Palmerston to Makara to bury this person, and drove back again. And it was like, but you know, in various situations I've had much more recently, some older people who have been far thinking have said, actually, I don't want to be embalmed. I actually want to be able to be cremated immediately. And so with minimal interference, they have been cremated, and the memorial service has taken place at the same time as the funeral would have taken place. But they can carry the urn out instead of the casket. And from a theological point of view, as a Christian, you know, what happens when we die? You know, even many secular people have this understanding that there is something beyond death. And so, where has the person gone? What's happened? You know, so those are things that people can think about.
Do you come across very often where a family wants to keep things very private?
Oh, absolutely. And certainly over the COVID situation, they kept them private for that reason. In fact, I got COVID. I protected myself from getting COVID really well until I had to take a pretty big funeral, and about 2 or 3 days later, down I went with COVID that was directly traceable back to the funeral, along with my wife and a few other people. So yes, that's been and that's been extremely hard for people to deal with, you know, because over COVID they weren't able to, you know, really engage with the family in the way that they would have wanted to. But others, you know, have been private people all their lives and they just want the immediate family. Sometimes, quite usually, if they're being cremated, we will have the service at a venue, and when they have finished the service, the immediate family will go with the hearse up to the crematorium, and then we will have just a quiet time together in which people can say their final farewells in a more intimate and relaxed way. And often there's laughter. Mm. You know, there's, you know, funerals are times of great hilarity at times, especially if children are involved sometimes. You know, few funerals don't have something that people can chuckle about when the stories are told.
When I was young, I used to see these things on movies, old movies and things like that, especially in America where they have the big jazz bands. And I had a dream of getting one of those myself, you know, just have a nice big band and sing all of those lovely spiritual songs that they sang back in those days. I guess they still do that too.
Well, it's interesting, there are significant cultural differences in funerals. I've had American pastors or priests here working with me at times who cannot believe, and also English ones, who cannot believe how personal and relatable our services are, how informal to some degree. They are often quite impersonal in those countries, where the celebrant or the priest or whoever really takes the service, and often there's not even tributes said. We have developed a pattern in New Zealand which is, I think, wonderful, where, you know, we can all, the focus is on the person, the story is being told there, the music that they wanted, all of those kinds of things. But we have also learnt from, and I'm speaking as a Pākehā, we have also learnt from Māori about not rushing a funeral, giving time to honour the person, even having the person at home sometimes, even having the casket open. So these are healthy things where our Pākehā and Māori culture can come together and learn from each other, and that's really good. I had a funeral a while ago though where people wanted to take, different factions wanted to take the body to different places for burial, and the person had not left their wishes clearly. And it led to some really challenging discussions and arguments. And, of course, there are historic cases where people have dug up the body and carried it away and things like that. And that can happen. Mm. So, you know, forethought, again, just to labour that point, is really important. But, you know, like you said, when we were growing up as Pākehā little kids, we never went to funerals, and even grandparents, we wouldn't necessarily have gone, we might have. When I first started this work, goodness, actually, when I think about it, it was more than 30 years ago. I was in youth work, and we ran a course for young people on death and grieving, and they loved it. Well, the parents came down on me like a ton of bricks. How was I daring to inflict this pain on their children and all the rest? But the kids were just, they loved it. And I still meet some of them, and they talk about it, you know. And actually, at the end of it, a number of the parents asked for a course for them as adults on grieving and death. And in fact, Massey University asked me to go and speak to their students on a one-hour session on grief and dying. And the students before that they were having a series of topics. The one before that was on humour. And the students told me afterwards, "Oh, we were scared about your session of grief and dying, but you know what? We laughed far more in your session than we did on the one in humour." One of the things that is, every funeral is different, but there are some categories. So a funeral for an elderly person who's 95 or whatever, or has been ill for a long time, has a whole different feel to it than one where there has been a sudden death. And we're very aware at this stage of what's happened up, you know, Napier, Taradale, Esk Valley, and up through the East Coast and through Auckland, where there have been deaths. And sadly, there might be people whose bodies are never retrieved. I've had to take funerals for that, and then memorial services, and they might come, you know, 3 or 4 months afterwards when the coroner's report is released or the police allow that to happen. And those are very hard funerals for everybody, because there is no body, there is no closure. So you're having a celebration for the life with the thought in the back of your head is, might they walk in the door kind of deal. So that those kinds of ones or other tragic ones, you know, like with children and so on, are challenging and very hard to prepare for.
With the preparation of those sort of things, you've obviously had training to do all of these different kinds of services, that it's a lot to learn.
It is a lot to learn, and experience is a great teacher. But as a celebrant and especially as a minister, I do have training in that. And the training isn't just in how to take a funeral, it's in being empathetic and understanding and asking questions. Knowing what can happen and can't happen. I mean, I try to run a very involved service where the family can have whoever they want and involved, and usually they do want people involved. And so, you know, you might get the grandchildren speaking, you might get the grandchildren painting and decorating the casket. I love that. I think they'd write a few things on my casket that I might not want to know about as a joke. But they, you know, so, I think it's really important to get a celebrant who knows the family, and it can be anybody. Anybody can actually take, in New Zealand law, can take a funeral. The death certificate has to be filed within, I think it is 3 days, by the funeral director. That's law. But anybody can take it, and you can take a funeral anywhere. You cannot bury anywhere. You've got to be within a registered cemetery. A badly taken funeral leaves an indelible mark on the family. I mean, they just remember it. Oh, I went to Auntie May's funeral, and gosh, the guy who took it, you know, just didn't know what he was doing, or the woman who took it didn't relate to us, or whatever, you know. So I think those things are really crucial. And not to have things imposed on the family that they don't want. So,
do you have any funny stories with weddings?
With weddings or funerals?
Both.
Well, When I say funny, funny's not necessarily the right word. One of the funerals I took some long time ago was almost like out of Peyton Place. We were carrying the casket, or the family were carrying the casket down. The husband had died, and but it was a second marriage. And the family of the first marriage had never got over his separation, whatever the circumstances were, and I didn't know them. But they arrived at the funeral at the same time. And they were shouting and yelling and screaming obscenities. About 10 of them making a huge noise. Now, you know, when you're carrying the casket down to be buried, you know, everybody is very quiet and so on. Anyway, we just had to say, right, okay, guys, we're just going to cut and run here. We're going to just continue as if nothing is out there is happening. So, you know, when my colleagues and I get together, and sometimes after we've had a gin and tonic or something like that, you know, there are some very interesting stories that do happen. And yes, the cardboard casket never worked. And yes, they're having situations where the body fell out underneath.
Good grief. I haven't heard any stories about that, but tell me.
I don't need to say
anything. Or is that a touchy subject?
Oh, no, it just is. You know, they experimented with them, but they never got it right. And, I mean, you can just see that that's, you know. But down the West Coast, there's a cemetery on a hillside, and they crank the casket up on a level trolley and get it to the top while the family walk around. They got to the top and the chain broke, and the casket whizzed down the rail, shot across the road, the trolley did, smashed through the front window of the chemist shop in this little town on the West Coast. The lid popped up. The corpse inside sat up, and the guy said, "Hey, have you got anything to stop my coffin?" Sorry, that's my bad joke. My bad grief joke. I told it at Massey, and the students loved it. But what I'd be encouraging people to do is to give some good thought to that. Some people will want to have prepaid funerals. Others want to see the funeral director now, and the celebrant, and have all of those kinds of things. And I mean, when we come to weddings, we spend a huge amount of time on preparation, but we spend no time on funeral preparation, and yet we're celebrating a life, whether it's a short life or a long life, and particularly for a long life, if we're celebrating that, you know, you can give yourself time to really do that well.
On that note, John, we're running out of time, very short of time, and we'll look forward to your next episode. Thank you very much.
This is part one of two. Listen next week for part two.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.